Well, welcome back to the Mindcastle podcast with myself, Reagan, and my brother, Austin.
That's me.
Yes. We spent the last two episodes or so tackling this concept of curiosity, follow that thread of curiosity, and learning new things, the mosaic of knowledge. Yeah, some really good stuff. So as I was plowing down that street last fall, ran into this interesting concept. So apparently, in the 1960s, there was a man that neither of us have heard about who saved the world by himself.
Whoa.
In a very short period of time. He averted World War III.
Okay.
Have you ever heard this story at all?
Never have.
Yeah. See, most people haven't. And it's like, he literally, like, this is a big deal. You know, you saved the world. And we haven't heard of this guy. That's the teaser. But to back it up a little bit, because some people are like, oh, come on, that can't be true. Well, if you dial back a bit on, you know, the study of history and different fields of philosophy and things, broadly speaking, it breaks down into two camps where it comes to history, where it says, you know, a single life doesn't actually make that much difference. That would be the one theory. The wheels of change are just too big, society, culture. How can one person make that much of a difference? Really speaking, they would even argue, like, someone like Hitler, he didn't actually move the needle that much. If it wasn't him, it would have been someone else. That's their theory, because these changes are the results of something bigger. But then there's the other theory that says a single life can have an extraordinary outsized impact on the world. Not saying it will, but it can, because again, it can be very hard to move the needle, this theory says. So those are the two theories. And I used to be like, okay, yeah, whatever, but I'm very much leaning towards the side that one life can make a massive difference for the world. There's a couple examples here before we get into the guy who saved the world. I just finished reading a horrendous but essential book that you should read sometime. It's called The Rape of Nanking. Have you heard of this book?
No, I haven't.
It's about World War II. Whew, not for the faint of heart. Yeah, it's probably one of the most brutal books I've read. During World War II, when the Japanese invaded Nanking, China in 1937, really terrible stuff. Like, stuff that's just like, there's no way that happened, but it did. Like, they have photographic evidence that it's very clear these things that were going down. It's basically the army went unhinged and just went crazy in this city for months on the local populace. It's a very large city, hundreds of thousands of people. Many, many, many thousands of people were massacred. It's just horrible. But what stood out in there, there's a bright spot where there were some foreigners living in the city, 24 of them that stayed and decided not to flee. They stayed and said, we're going to set up a safe zone in the city for these civilians. Mm-hmm. And over the course of, you know, several weeks, months, their incredible efforts in the safe zone easily, like, no question, saved thousands of lives. Like, there's no question that they saved thousands of lives. They helped and directly impacted over 300,000 civilians, 24 people.
Over the course of how long?
It was over, I think, over a few months. It wasn't that long.
Wow.
Because this happened quick. Like, the Japanese army rolled in and the Chinese army basically abandoned the city. So they take it quick, do their thing for a month or two, and then that section of the army is redeployed somewhere else. So it wasn't like this went on and on and on.
Wow.
Because the city had to get back on its feet. So it was basically like a month or two where the city had no government. It was total anarchy, just looting and rioting. I mean, just horrible violence all the time.
Wow.
Basically, endless. You couldn't go on the street. And these 24 people easily saved thousands of lives, no question, because they set up the safe zone because they're foreigners and it was recognized. And so they just crammed it full of people and provided medical care. And they would make these forays out into the city, grabbing people, you know, running them out of their houses and sneaking them in, you know, in the middle of the night into the safe zone and, you know, providing medical care and patching people up, then go back out and get, I mean, it is wild stuff. So I would make the argument, if those 24 people, there's even minutes, they take good documented minutes, because, like, they set up an NGO for it and everything, and they take minutes of their first meeting where they get this group together and they said, okay, do we leave? Last ship out is leaving tomorrow. I think it was like next day. Do we leave or do we stay? And most everybody leaves. And these 24 people had to make that choice. Do we leave or do we stay?
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, the one argument say, oh, well, someone would have stayed. Somebody would have done it. But, like, those people still had to choose.
Yeah.
I'm going to do the right thing here, even though they were pretty sure they would get killed. Like, they thought, like, their lives were seriously in danger. But in the end, they actually weren't. They were all fine. Like, they,
wow.
Because the Japanese army didn't want to mess with them because the international outcry. All that to say, it's a horrible book, but also oddly inspiring of, like, those people, you know, made that choice and at great personal risk. I mean, extreme personal risk, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So all that to say, that is one example that it really convinced me how we live does matter. We do get mm-hmm. to choose. Now, that's one story. Now, to the guy who saved the world by right. himself, single-handedly. Uh-huh. I'm going to butcher this name. Okay, you ready for this?
Butcherage?
All right, mm-hmm. here we go. Stanislav Petrov, I think is how you say it. I have no idea if I got the right. Mm-hmm. Russian guy. Perfect example.
I think you have to put more into it.
I can't, dude, my Russian, I love the Russian accent, but man, I can't even attempt to do it. So he is a man who likely saved the world as we know it. And basically none of us have heard of him. Know the fact I can't even say his name. This is in 1983. The relationship between the United States, Soviet Union, they're at an all-time low. For example, the Korean Airlines flight 007, interesting, had just been shot down by the Soviets. It was a really bad time. Okay. Like, they just shot down a passenger airline. Things are really tense. We're on the brink, almost as close as we've ever been, to full-on nuclear annihilation of the planet, basically. You know, and the guys in Moscow are saying, you know, America is on the verge of launching a nuclear first strike. That's, things are getting bad. Paranoia is at its peak. Well, at the height of this paranoia, a Lieutenant Colonel Petrov in the Soviet Air Defense Forces, he looks at his computer screen, I think it's in the evening or at night, and sees a report of incoming nuclear missile strike from the United States to blow up his position. Whoa. And he knows the protocol requires he retaliate with full force. I mean, this is nuclear war. This is like standard operating procedure. You usually have like, I think it's like 15 to 17 minutes from first sign of nuclear strike. The report comes in that you have to retaliate because if you don't, their nukes are going to hit your nukes and then you're knocked out of the game and then they can just steamroll you the rest of the way. This is classic Cold War, mutually assured destruction, the MAD doctrine.
Yep.
So he's seen this on his screen and he knows what the protocol is. You retaliate full force. So what does he do? Well, he decided it's a computer malfunction and he didn't push the button. He's just like, nah, it'll be fine. It'll be completely fine. And his hesitation is the real reason we're all here today.
Wow. So wait, he decided that the nukes come in were a computer malfunction.
Yeah, he's like,
or he decided that his computer had a malfunction and it didn't work when he pushed the button.
No. He sees them on the screen and he's like, I'm not going to launch the nukes. Basically,
he's so like, he made a calculated estimation, was like, the U.S. isn't that dumb.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to bet that that's actually not nukes on my screen.
Wow.
And he had full protocol authorization to hit the launch button. And turn the key, push the big scary button. And you know what? That would have straight up, that would have been World War III.
Yep.
Now, most likely, none of us would be here right now. World War III would have been really bad. And maybe not. Maybe it would have been more contained than that. But like, it seems very unlikely. Like, it would have been really bad, regardless. That's one man in that position who made that decision that I'm not going to do that. Now, someone would say, oh, yeah, but, you know, one life doesn't actually make that difference. Because if it had been someone else, they would have made the same decision. You know, are you willing to bet the world on that? I'm going to say there was something in him that said, I'm going to choose what I feel is right here.
Yeah.
You know, just like those foreigners in Nanking saying, we're going to stay and we're going to choose to do what's right here, even at extreme personal cost. They still had to make that decision. Like, you can still argue, oh, but somebody else would have helped. Somebody else would have made that call. The one life didn't make a difference. I don't buy it. And here's why. Like, that we can make a difference too.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that you're going to single-handedly avert World War III, most likely.
hopefully not.
You know, but it's important that, like, every single day that you're alive, you are making decisions that do matter. Like, you can't just say, oh, in the big scheme of things, it doesn't really matter. It's like, your decisions count. And that's what I'm trying to get at here. You control what you choose. You do have real choice. I do believe that, which gets into a lot of philosophy. You know, if I just read like a 3,000 page book on this, you know, of like decisions, like how do we have free will, don't we? You know, every good deed that's done, from simple to extreme, like saving the world kind of good deed, at its base level, someone decided to do that. You know, someone had to make that choice. You get to choose, just like the foreigners in Nanking or, you know, Petrov, choosing what's right instead of simply saying, well, it's not my problem. You know, it's not my problem.
Fascinating.
So yeah, it can be as small as, you know, you put a smile on a child's face a day, you know, or maybe as significant as you save someone's life. You join the local fire department, you save a life. You know, it could be, you know, it could be any of those things, you know, in a moment, in the moment, we likely don't really know the full results of our choices, but you still do choose. Right. You still make a choice. And that's what I'm really trying to get at here. We have the autonomy to choose what is right, even when it's very uncomfortable, even when it doesn't look like it'll really matter. Mm-hmm. We can still say, hey, I'm not going to take the boat out of this city. I'm actually going to choose to stay because that's the right thing to do, even though it's probably going to kill me. And then as a result, they treat, you know, 300,000 people. That's just, again, incredible. 24 people. I can't put my mind is...
Did they sleep?
No, not really. I mean, the photos of that, because that's great. There's well-documented stuff.
Yeah.
And
man, that's crazy.
You need to get the book. It's a couple bucks on Amazon. Again, it's really gruesome. It's horrible, horrible stuff. But
probably we'll link it in the show notes.
Yeah, I think we should. Or yeah, I actually listened to it, but that was almost too harsh. I about should have read it so that I could go slowly. So all that to say, what I'm saying essentially is face the future with moral courage.
Mm-hmm.
Like don't take the easy path and miss those opportunities to make the world a better place.
Yeah.
You know, by saying, oh, well, someone else will take care of it. It doesn't really matter anyway. It does. You know, you don't want to succumb to the selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
Don't keep your talents and your resources to yourself, you know, or this sense, well, it doesn't matter. Like, I can't make, the world's just getting worse. It doesn't really matter what I do. Yeah. Don't let those excuses stop you from choosing to try to make it a little better every day. Because if not you, then who? Like, who's going to do it?
Yeah.
So enter the future courageously. It's kind of the whole point. And, you know, oh, and the crazy thing is with someone like Petrov, you know, he saved the world, but I mean, he died in anonymity. Like nobody really knew anything. Like, it wasn't until many years after that this kind of came out, and it wasn't like they lauded him with huge honors and you saved it. You know, it was just kind of like, oh, yeah, just kind of whatever, you know. And it's like, what did you do today at work? I'm like, oh, I saved the world. Yeah, we had a computer glitch. And actually it was their radar system was bouncing off the atmosphere. They had a new system and it bounced off the atmosphere in a weird way and made signals that looked exactly like nuclear weapons were inbound.
Anyway. Oh, that's terrifying.
Yeah, exactly. So they quick fixed it.
Yeah. Hey, by the way.
Yeah, just so you know.
Wow, that is really, really wild.
Yeah.
We don't know, obviously, but there's chances are we won't ever change or move the needle that much. But what's cool is that this whole mindset doesn't rely on that.
No, it doesn't.
At all. It relies on do what you know is right now in this moment. And what the responses are is what they are. And it might be like, you know, it might be like this 24 where you have huge, huge recognition and really amazing things come out of it. Or it might be like this other dude that like did a really cool thing, really amazing thing that saved us a lot of things, but like no recognition at all.
Yeah.
Like he could have actually like really suffered from that. Like he could have got fired. He could have been put in jail probably.
Yeah. Cause you didn't do your job.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if he got it wrong,
well, he wouldn't be here either.
We would be toast. No, if he was wrong for not launching the nukes and the US had, and they just blasted the Soviet Union into existence, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like oh man, I can't even imagine.
I really wonder what his brain was doing.
Whew, man. Yeah. But see, his thing, I think how he made that choice, because it was a calculated decision.
Yeah.
Is he's like, well, we just upgraded our system. They had a new system.
Yeah.
And there was probably something in him. He's like, I'm not sure I trust this new system. So I'm going to go with my gut feeling, even though reason tells me I should push the button.
Yeah.
Or same with these foreigners, you know, in Nanking, like making that call. And the thing that's really interesting about that story is they were really messy. Like those people were not people you would hang on your wall as heroes. Like one of them was a Nazi. He was from Germany, part of the Nazi party. And when they made that safe zone, he literally hung a swastika from the middle of it, a Nazi flag, so that the Japanese wouldn't bomb it because the Japanese were partners, like allies with Germany.
Whoa.
You know, so we look at that now and be like, oh my word, like I would never hang a swastika from my house, you know, like you work with a Nazi. Yeah, because it was messy. Like these were just normal people that got thrown into a really weird situation. Like some of them were from England. So you have like a German guy and a dude from England and like a dude, like it was a whole international group. And it's like their countries were at extremely tense. Mm-hmm. And yet they're working together for something that they know is right. And so you have this guy who is a actual literal Nazi, but he is right in there with them trying to help these people. But then afterwards he goes back to Germany and Germany continues doing its thing and has a Holocaust. So it's like, you know, people are messy. Yeesh. Like, you know, it starts getting really complicated, but the point is they still made that choice. We're going to do the right thing.
Here. Yeah.
Even though those people aren't saints, you know, we can't look at that and be like, I want to be like that guy. No, we actually probably don't, but we do want to look at that decision and say, we honor that decision because that was the right thing to do. You know, you stood up for something. And even though that, when I read that part of the book, it's like, wait, they literally had a swastika flying from their safe zone. So they wouldn't get bombed because the Japanese would be like, oh, that's our allies. Like, what in the world? Like, oh my word. It's just,
wow.
I'm so confused. But the point being, you know, human beings are messy. Decisions are often not super clear. Like it can be like, but there's still that sense of saying, this is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Like we want to help these people. You know, even if in this case, one of the guys in that group of 24, yeah, is not exactly a role model, you know, but there's still that we have people here that need our help, you know. Anyways, in the end, it's actually a really beautiful story, but it's also really sad.
Yeah.
So, well, anyways,
a bit more of a heavy episode, maybe. I guess also how we decide what's right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, because there's some people that are like, this is the right thing to do, and then they go do something like really horrible, like Hitler, for example. Yeah. Like, so we have to really be careful in how we choose what is right, and make sure that foundation is coming from a place that is secure.
Go all Victorian on you and say, you know, you need that rootedness in like virtues and, you know, like the sense of what is the proper thing to do.
Yeah.
And that's really hard because at least Western culture is really losing that, that anchoring, because we're going this sense of, well, it's
personal truth. It's,
personal truth. And so suddenly it's like, well, my personal truth says I should, you know, loot your, I saw that on Twitter. It's like, I'm going to loot your shop because we're making a statement here about blah, 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 some riot or something. And the shop owner is like, but like, I agree with you guys, please don't loot my shop. And they're like, no, we're going to do it anyway. You know, just things like that. It was like their personal, well, my personal truth, I'm just going to do this. I'm going to smash up your, you know, and steal all your stuff because that's what I think is right. You know, and it's like, now hold on. If you step back and actually think about that, you know, is this selfishness? Is this like, what's your motive? And that's where you really got to examine. And that's the part that I love about that story in Nanking is they had an out. They could have left and been safe. And they chose to basically give up their own lives and say, we're going to do this thing because we care about these people more than we care about ourselves. And I really think if you have that kind of, not always, but that kind of sense of my personal safety isn't really the issue. It's these other people. I care about them more.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to find like the foundation of like what separates the difference, because the person that loots that shop would never have made that decision. I'm fully confident of that.
No, because they were in a crowd though. See, the crowd is just doing this. So it's like, it's fine.
It's like, this is our personal truth. This is right. We're going to do this because this needs to happen and society needs to change or whatever. It's like, sorry, but I don't think that person would have stayed in that city and helped those people, because ultimately what's driving that person is the root of selfishness. And this has to change because I believe it's right. And if it changes, then my life gets better.
Or if they were all alone and walk up with a brick and smash that guy's shop in front of him and steal his stuff and see if he would actually do it.
Yeah. And his kids are there and his wife, and like you start actually seeing the repercussions.
It was really sad because he was like agreeing with, like he was part of like he agreed with them, which was what was really wild. They're like, but this is more important. So you got to, you know. And they did. And that's the sad thing is they did do it.
So like the aspect of this comes back to is like, we need to like eliminate the things that are going to create that kind of action, I guess. Like, like discern, like really decide what the moral implications are of your actions and decide that very, very well and make sure that it's not rooted in selfishness.
Or mob. That's,
you remove those two elements and you're in a lot better place to make a decision.
Yeah. When that's even things like, you know, people have tried to figure out what's going on with things like the Holocaust. You know, I just finished a book, Ordinary Men. That one and The Rape of Nanking are probably the some of the most important texts in the last 100 years on human nature, because they talk about Police Battalion 101 in Germany, and they were deployed mostly in Poland. Ordinary guys who weren't drafted into the army because they were too old, or they just were like shopkeepers or whatever. So they draft them into the police force.
Mm.
Mild, no big deal. You're just policemen. Oh, well, actually, you're part of the Nazi party. Oh, well, you know, over years, it kind of got a little more extreme, Oh, hey, we're deploying you to Poland. Oh, hey, by the way, we need you to guard these trains. Oh, by the way, can you help us load the Jews in the trains? Oh, by the way, we don't even want to take them to the concentration camp. Can you just shoot them in the woods? Like, and before you know it, you had these very, very ordinary guys.
Yeah.
Within a few years, were doing mass murder. And they were, they were the police battalion that murdered more people, I think, than any other battalion, I'm going to say, in the whole war. It's many thousands. I can't remember how many thousands of people. And they were just ordinary guys. Well, we were just following orders. That's what everybody else was doing. You know, and it was just like, and there were a few, to their credit, who did say, hey, we're not a part of this. And there were some that left, you know, which is crazy. They actually let them leave. Like, it wasn't like they were going to get persecuted for leaving or executed or something. Like, they actually said, like, hey, if you're not up to this, like, you can leave. And some of them did. But most of them decided to stay because they didn't want to look like sissies. They wanted to, well, we're part of this unit. And like, these are guys, we've worked with them for 5 years. Like, we're buddies. And if I leave now, that makes me look bad. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, wow, the more after over time, the moral compass just got really lost where they made that choice, you know, they made that choice. And it's like, you choose, you know, you can't look at those guys and be like, oh, well that, you know, they didn't have any choice. They had a choice.
Yeah.
You know, and they chose clearly, they chose the evil, you know, and
yeah. I think we need to be careful not to get too political with all of this as well. But I don't know. It's just, it really does. When talking about this, I want to be careful that we don't give license to just be like, psh, whatever you feel like is right.
No.
Go do that. Like it goes a lot further than that. And like, I really honestly think we're going to look back at this time of society and really see that it led us down some very unfortunate paths.
Possibly.
and just like now we're looking at these people that made those decisions, good and bad. I wonder what we're going to think about ourselves now, looking at the decisions we made 20 years in the future. You know, the people, when we look back in 20 years and we're like, oh, you invented TikTok. Oh, do you think that was a good idea, buddy?
That like, was evil.
Now we realize that all of this two entire generations or generation has this, 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 and this because of your action and because you wanted money.
Like Mark Zuckerberg.
And all these people that, oh, you invented this, yeah, whatever. By the way, now we have an entire generation that lives in like this hyper
virtual reality
space that doesn't even exist. And they don't even know how to talk to people or whatever comes out of this.
Yeah.
There's going to be some great things. It's going to be fun. There's also going to be some really terrible things probably.
That's
potentially. So like, I'm just saying, yep, like, we need to look in the future and we have to look back at these moments and realize that we're making those decisions now. And like, I don't want to be all doom and gloom. I'm actually kind of excited about VR, but it's, but I'm just saying like, I'm going to have to answer for those decisions. It's like, Austin, you uploaded this video. It got 2.5 million views. Was it worth that many people spending thousands of hours watching your content for 10 man. Minutes? Was it actually worth their time? Did you actually improve their life? Mm-hmm. Like you made a lot of money off of that. And subconsciously, that's going to direct your decisions for the rest of your life because you got a huge dose of success from that. So like, that's going to change my life. I have to look at that decision and decide, was that right for the rest of my life? And that's a thing. That is not something to take lightly.
And you don't want to go around constantly beating yourself up about the past. But the flip side is, you'd better be paying attention to it so you learn.
Yeah.
And you quote unquote do better next time. You have to be careful with that then too, because then it's like, oh, it's all about performance and do better. You can work yourself to goodness. It's like, well, okay. But it's also recognizing like there's a blackness inside of me that, you know, we haven't reviewed the Gulag Archipelago in this part.
Not yet.
Have we? Okay. That one's coming because he gets into this super deep.
We're waiting for me to read it first.
Yeah, it's right there. Go get it right there on the show. So in this episode, man, this one's getting really kind of deep.
Yeah, we're going deep on this one.
But it's really important. So there's several books. I'm going to just go on a book recommendation splurge here.
Links in the description.
So Gulag Archipelago, I would go with the official abridged edition because the unabridged is like thousands of pages and you'll probably never make it through. But yeah, Gulag Archipelago talks about this quite a lot. Ordinary Men and The Rape of Nanking. If you read those three books, they have glimmers of hope and like goodness of humanity. But the key points of those are how ordinary people do horrendous things to other people in the right circumstances and how that's a choice. Like someone chose to invade the city and massacre people and do horrible things. And just like, you know, and in the Gulag Archipelago, his big piece is the difference between the prisoners in the Soviet work camps. Basically, he was a Gulag survivor for, I don't know, he was in like 14 years, I'm going to say 20 years, something. I forget exactly. It was a long time up in Siberia. And so the difference between me as a worker and the guy guarding me, you know, was the difference of he had the gun and I didn't. Like he said, we were all the same. And and for him to come out on the other side and say something like that is, for one thing, incredibly self-aware.
Yeah.
But he also said, he's like, honestly, he's like, I could have been that guy. I could have been the prison guard if my life had been taken a slightly different way. If I had made some different decisions. And he said, I can easily see that. And he said, really, it's not about the evil is over there and the good is here. He's like, no, the line of good and evil runs through the human heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's this constant war within ourselves to try to keep that evil from expanding and taking, you know, and choosing the good. And it's this daily thing. And out of his experience, he actually becomes a Christian because he's like, of all the religions and all the philosophies, none of them could answer these questions and this the bleakness, but also the hope. Like he compares, it's this weird contrast of like really beautiful moments actually in these camps compared with the evil. And he said, nothing else has an answer for this. You know, I don't see anything else, any other religion that explains this, because only Christianity has God come down and actually partake in that.
Wow.
And actually live through that with us, God with us, Emmanuel, and understand the blackness of the human heart. And that's the only way that I can become redeemed. He said, there's no other religion. There's no other way that I can take that experience and be okay with it, because just because of how bad humans can be to each other, basically. Anyway, it's a brilliant read, a classic, and everybody should read it. That's what I'm trying to get at here. You know, Petrov saving the world, you know, these guys in Nanking, whatever. They made choices.
Mm-hmm.
And they made the right choice. You know, they were confronted with extreme evil and they said, you know, we're not going to succumb. We're not going to be selfish. Mm-hmm. You know, we know this is wrong. Like we can't, I can't live with myself if I let the army come through here and I don't do something to protect these people.
Mm-hmm.
And the cool part, they did it all passively. Of course they didn't have any kind of weapons or anything, but that's, yeah. Anyway, it's inspiring, but also like really almost scary.
Yeah.
You know?
It's yeah.
Like, okay, here's your choice now. You know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Because that,
you know, don't put that on me. Sorry. And that's the other thing. People are like, oh, I can't handle it. Well, that decision is on you, whether you like it or not. I mean, it's just, sorry, you're a human. Like you have to make decisions every single day.
And you know? I think it's also important to note that they made decisions that took them there, right?
Yeah.
That, and probably a lot of good decisions.
They were just
life.
They were like guys that worked at the embassy or some businessman who happened to be there on business or some tourist. Or like they were just like random people.
Yeah.
Then happened but to be there.
The little decisions that they made in their life at their job to not cheat this person or not, you know, argue back about this or that or not get proud about whatever. Lended to that ability to actually make that big decision when it came
That's
to it.
That's a really good point. Like That's a really good point.
All the other decisions are very important that got them there too.
And it's kind of like, and then the flip side is that police battalion, they went the other way.
They had
years of conditioning, you know, a little here, a little there, you know, and then when it finally came down to load these people up on this train to go to the death camps, they did it.
Yeah.
Well, and then, it's like, I mean, so sad.
You have Jews even that went that way too.
Oh yeah.
In a very short amount of time, shorter than that.
Where they became guards,
and they were even more brutal many times. Like, anyway, so
Holocaust, man, that's a whole nother,
so many topic. Lessons that we can take from
that. I'm working on a newsletter piece right now. It keeps getting longer, but I'm calling it "Why Everyone Should Go to the Holocaust Museum." You know, and so I actually did my thesis work at SMBI on the Holocaust, and I've been to there's two Holocaust museums, but the one in Jerusalem is the Yad Vashem. You need to go there. I mean, you just have to, because the Yad Vashem captured the humanity of it all way more than, it's way bigger than the one in DC.
Okay.
So literally, like, if you want a recommendation, get on a plane right now and go to Israel and go to the Yad Vashem, and you will learn so much about human nature and those decisions, you know, so many decisions, millions and millions of decisions that were made that led to those results.
Yeah.
Someone chose that. It did not just happen. And that's kind of the point of that museum and to memorialize those decisions so that it doesn't happen again. That's kind of their big thing. And it has a different potency because it's right there, you know, in Israel amongst the people that this happened to. And they have the library of all the victims.
Oh, wow.
And they keep adding because they keep finding more, you know, of documented, like, because there's so many that were missing, they weren't sure, and family members keep coming forward. And so it's like floor to ceiling. I forget how many stories. It's like a circular dome and it's wild. And it's like every one of these books is full of pages of names of people who were in this place because someone chose to load them on that train or to push them through that work camp. And it's like that really makes you think about you know, maybe we'll never live through something that dramatic, but people did. Like there were regular people who lived through that and were a part of it and made decisions. And I know it's really easy in hindsight to judge, but at the same time, it's also pretty easy to say, well, you knew you were doing evil, you know, and you didn't turn away. You didn't change. Anyways, makes you think. So
yeah, it does. There's
some recommendations. Get on a plane, go to Israel, read those three books that I mentioned. We're good to go. Then you will have a deeper understanding of human nature for sure. So,
yeah, anyway. Definitely.
Wow.
Well, I think we're going to wrap this episode up. A little bit of a deeper one, but thank you guys for listening. And we'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Might have hit on a few nerves here and there. it definitely isn't. It's a wake-up call to hear this kind of stuff. And I think we do need to have a lot of self-awareness. I think self-awareness is one of the greatest tools that we can obtain in this life. Not understanding self as much as understanding the repercussions that our actions have and having that awareness.
Yeah.
If you haven't already, we would love for you to leave us a 5-star review. That greatly helps this podcast out. You can also sign up to get our newsletters as well. They actually resemble a podcast like this in many ways. It's just like, hey, we learned this really cool thing and here it is. And here's the cool lessons that come with it in a very quick read, 5 minutes, 5 minute read.
Four minute read.
So yeah, go ahead and sign up for that if you would like. And our YouTube channels and our websites are down in the description as well. We would love for you to check those out.